I'd like to open the session with a really, really cool paper. In fact, we've got five cool papers, several really interesting studies to hear about. The first paper is by Dr. Lois McCloskey. And as you can see, it's entitled After Gestational Diabetes, Postpartum Glucose Tolerance Testing, and the Dilemma of Risk Across the Life Course. And Dr. McCloskey is a Bostoner. She's an associate professor of community health sciences, and she directs the maternal and child health concentration at Boston University. And she also directs the maternal and child health public health training grant there. So she's a colleague of mine. So be nice. And she's very smart. She teaches courses in community health leadership and consultation, as well as sexual and reproductive health advocacy. Dr. McCloskey is absolutely passionate about reconnecting women's health care across the life course, joining both the maternal and child health principles that we have and chronic disease prevention. She's also passionate about assuring the women's health benefits of the Affordable Care Act. So these big picture issues are really what has influenced her current work. So let's welcome Dr. Lois McCloskey from Boston University.
Thank you, Wendy. Hi, everyone. Welcome to our city. And I'm just wondering if you're enjoying this pristine autumn day, or if you're sort of ready to go home by now. It's Tuesday. I want to acknowledge one of the colleagues on my paper who is able to be present with me today. Hi, Judith Bernstein. Thank you. And also my other collaborators, Michael Winter of our Data Coordinating Center, Ron Iverson, and Aviva Lee Parrott of our OB department. It is, in fact, on one day not unlike this one in the fall of 2009 that I met Ron Iverson. I walk into his office to talk about OBGYN possible collaborations, and in the midst of our conversation, he turns to me and he says, "You know what I think is the most interesting question right now for our women? Why do we not follow up women with gestational diabetes, not even with a postpartum glucose test?" I didn't know much about that, about GDM, but I can tell you it captured my attention, as Wendy said, as someone very interested and committed to kind of fix the problems that we have in the transitions, particularly from pregnancy, postpartum, to primary care. So that launched our now 4-year various investigations, and I'm going to share with you one in particular today that we started with and give you a flavor of work that we're now doing to follow up on it. So without further ado, gestational diabetes presents to us both, it's a perfect storm and therefore, of course, the perfect opportunity. We have in the world that we live in Boston and other urban areas in the United States, rising obesity, diabetes, hypertension rates sort of in the background. And we have in MCH this recognition of the importance of life course, of the big picture social determinants and care and concern across time, even across generations. And then we have, of course, I hope still, since I last looked, the ACA. And within it, support for medical homes or what we might call health homes, which provide possibility for the kind of transitions and continuity in care that we haven't really had. Wanda Barfield at CDC likes to pose this question. I love this graphic. When do you jump in this intersection of MCH and chronic disease? And I'm going to argue that, in fact, GDM is the perfect time, a particularly perfect moment to jump in, both because it is a complication of pregnancy, very important, and it's a harbinger of future risk. So just a few facts I'll run through very quickly. In the United States, we have this rapid rise in type 2 diabetes. You can see the numbers right here. Last we checked, we're at about 12 plus million women over 20. And this is the one that caught me by surprise. 30%, it's estimated, of course, were first diagnosed with, of those who get type 2 later, were first diagnosed during pregnancy with GDM. So GDM, for those of you who might not know, is defined as the first onset of carbohydrate intolerance during pregnancy. And again, just a quick look at some of these facts. Prevalence estimates vary, 7 to 18%, and of course we're now changing the clinical criteria, so it's likely the incidence rate's going to go up. Rates on the rise in any case, even without that criteria change, among younger women. And what we do know is that women from underrepresented minority communities are especially likely to have, two times more likely to have GDM. And disparities, of course, reflect their sister epidemics. And just, I know you can't read the writing, but the top, first of all, on this is not shown Native Americans. They have, in fact, the highest rate of GDM. Next, Hispanic, then Asian, African American, and white. Consequences are great, in fact. There's a 7.43, to be exact, relative risk. Isn't that a shocker? I mean, that's really quite amazing for women with GDM to go on to develop type 2, and rates of conversion, in fact, are similar across race and ethnic groups. And here's some other interesting facts. GDM recurs. It frequently recurs, 45% of subsequent pregnancies, and that percent is greater for women in URM communities. Each pregnancy increases the likelihood of type 2 coming down the pike later. And within 6 months, 5% of these women will go on to be diagnosed with type 2. But by 10 years out, it is 60%. And that's a statistic we're finding is not shared with women. It's not always known by providers. And we, I think many of us know the consequences for infants. There are many, and they're lifelong. But prevention is possible. Type 2 diabetes can be delayed or prevented because the lifestyle changes that one might initiate in pregnancy can, in fact, not easily, but can be continued and are preventive. And in fact, researchers have found postpartum glucose tolerance testing to be cost-effective. There are, in addition, guidelines, very specific guidelines. They've gotten more specific over time. And I'll just take one example. ACOG, in 2009, updated their guidelines for their physicians. There should be testing at 6 to 12 weeks postpartum after a diagnosis of GDM. And the preferred test is, of course, the most expensive and the most complicated, both for providers and women. It's the 2-hour, 75-gram oral glucose tolerance test. Many of you had it, have had it, I know I have, and it is awful. But nonetheless, very sensitive and important. So the point of these next couple of slides is simply to say that this has been studied a lot. Their meta-analysis came out in 2011. And the fact remains that while rates across institutions of postpartum testing differ, they are low. 34 wide range in a meta-analysis, 34 to 73% get tested. But I can tell you, most studies in this country show that it ranges between 20 and 30, maybe 40%. And most, the rates of oral glucose tolerance testing, the preferred test, are exceedingly low. It varies by race and ethnicity, but in all different ways and directions, depending on the institution. But what is clear is that institutions with the highest percentage of underrepresented minority women have the lowest overall rates. And remember, those are the ones at highest risk for type 2. This is one example before our study at San Francisco General. So most researchers have to be very liberal in their definition, and they end up, because rates of the preferred test are so low, they end up saying, well, any test. It might be the fasting glucose, or it might be the A1C3. And for those of you who aren't clinicians, I'm not either. You know, you can ask someone later about the difference. But the important thing to know is that A1C3 only gives you a snapshot. It's not a very of one's blood sugar at 3 months, or the last 3 months or so. And fasting glucose isn't as sensitive as the 2-hour or 3-hour OGTT. So we decided to launch our studies, we would, at Boston Medical Center, which is an urban safety net hospital with a largely black population, and nobody had done a similar study among largely African American and women of other African descent. So we wanted to know why. I mean, we want to know why, and we want to know what to do about it, because the postpartum testing is just the beginning, not the end, it's just the beginning of ongoing follow-up and support and counsel to women and provider vigilance. So we did a retrospective cross-sectional study for women at these ages, 18 to 44. And it's a fairly, as you saw, low prevalence, so we had to take a six-year period. And we, of course, looked only at those who did not have a prior diagnosis of diabetes. We used our administrative and clinical database, and we looked at all kinds of factors that happened, variables that were on that database. So we didn't have everything we wanted, but we did have patient characteristics, provider specialty and type, and no one before had really looked closely at that, and health service variables, prenatal care, initiation, postpartum visit, does it matter? Primary care visit, does that matter? And our dependent measures were a glucose tolerance test at 10 weeks postpartum, which is ideal, and if not, then how about within 6 months even? So we did kind of the usual bivariate and then multivariate analysis using logistic regression. We corrected for women who had multiple births in the time period. We used GEE. And I just want to use these data slides again to give you the picture, but rather quickly. Our population was pretty balanced by age, with most being in the quote-unquote optimal childbearing years. 25 to 34, some older women, largely black, as you can see, but very diverse. Parity, preferred language, large-ish Haitian population at BMC, and most started within the first two trimesters of pregnancy. They were either on Medicaid, largely, or our own BMC version of a health plan for low-income women. Most had an OBGYN provider, but we were really interested to see the difference between family practice docs and OBGYN nurse midwives and doctors. So you can get a quick look at who our providers were. And interestingly, 80% had a postpartum visit. Unlike what many claim, that women don't attend their postpartum visits. And about a third, in fact, even had a primary care visit by 6 months. So did that make a difference? Well, I only want to point you, these a little bit hard to read, but the very last row is where I want to point you to. Rates of all the tests were so low, but if we take the composite measure, any test at all for glucose testing after birth, by 10 weeks, 13% at our institution, and by 6 months, 23%. This is lowest reported in the literature. And we have a strong OB staff with diabetes expertise. So what mattered? Again, I'm going to just walk you through this, but you can see those p-values on the right. What mattered was age. Younger women were only half as likely to be tested as older women. That's quite consistent with others' findings. Race, ethnicity mattered, but in our kind of unbalanced cell sizes, it didn't turn out to be statistically significant. Black women were over 3 times more likely to be tested, Hispanics also, than white women, and Asians. Parity also mattered, with parity more than zero being more likely to be tested. But what's really interesting, I feel, is the department of the specialty of the provider mattered. Family medicine was only 40% as likely to do a test than an OB provider. Interestingly, postpartum visit didn't make a bit of difference, but a primary care visit did. If you had a primary care visit, you were 3 times more likely to be tested. And when we threw them all into the pot, that is all those that were significant in the bivariates, what remained important was age and Department of Prenatal Care delivery, with family medicine being only 36% as likely to perform, and that primary care visit. If you get one, if you make it to your primary care provider by 6 months, you're 3 times more likely to be followed up, at least with this marker, using this marker of a postpartum test. So we learned we had the lowest rates reported. Providers of all types are horrible at following clinical guidelines, generally speaking, but there is usually a lag in guidelines and provider behaviors. We know that in the literature. Race and ethnicity matters, but ours was an unstable finding. And some contact with the health system after birth is good, but it's not sufficient. Primary care is especially good. So what you'll see here is that providers say they do much better than they actually do in the literature and in our studies. And family medicine providers admit that they don't really know much about this and don't pay attention. I'll save that for those who may wish to speak afterwards about why physicians in particular don't seem to follow clinical guidelines. None of us really do all we're supposed to do. A little bit of qualitative work has been done, and in this one study yet unpublished, providers tend to say the problem is women's lack of knowledge, low motivation. Women tend to say, yep, they have a lack of knowledge about this, but they get a lot of confusing messages. So what goes wrong? And what we know is that we have to pay attention to all three of these levels. Zopka reminds us that in a wonderful article I would refer you to, where she uses abnormal mammogram follow-up to make that point. And we're now following up with both qualitative in-depth studies, in-depth interviews with women and with providers. We're finding some really interesting things. I'm just going to give you a quick flavor. And now we're doing a pilot at the level of the woman, and looking to do a pilot as well at the systems level. Because what we find is this we're process mapping, because it is, in fact, one of the most complicated processes of care I can imagine, between ordering the test, actually women making it to get this complicated test when the lab is open, and then providers who ordered it finding out results, and then referring to primary care and many things in between that begin at diagnosis through discharge at birth and onward. So we're learning from women that they get really murky information, that everyone has diabetes. So many in their families and communities, and it's scary because they see the impact. And when gestational diabetes is over, oh, what a relief. And you don't really want to find out it's going to continue. And of course, we all know this. Women are juggling so many things, including their health priorities. Providers tell us they really have trouble balancing during pregnancy when a woman has so much at stake, risk and reassurance. And therefore, they tend to go heavy on the reassurance side. And they're frustrated, and they don't follow up. They don't really think women will follow up. And then they can't, systems-wise, follow up. There's no mechanism for them to even know what test results are. So close with these few words. I think you might take a quick glimpse yourself. But the one I want to highlight is the first. When I had the test, and for diabetes, she said, everything's perfect. I don't have it now. I can tell you, I was so happy. I feel like I have something heavy, and I throw it now. And providers, the one I will point to here, unless they have some complication, the first one, that brings them back to me in the hospital, I don't really follow up on them from an OBGYN. So there is some hope on the horizon with health homes. We all have to think hard about how to take that advantage of that with interconception medical homes, as well as electronic medical records. And these are some of the strategies we're trying for patient engagement. So I say GDM is the perfect place to jump in. Thank you.